All right, everybody. Seamless transition from music right into going live. My name is David Lee. I'm the host of The Pardon Will Live, is what you're watching right now. Also known as Pardon Will Art on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Go like and subscribe. Follow me, all that stuff, you jabronis. Getting back in the saddle, starting off at, promptly at 8:30. I'm going to just start saying around 8-ish. We'll do this every Sunday night around 8-ish. Most likely 8:30. It's normally what I do. At least I'm here. I'm here every Sunday. That's false. I wasn't here last Sunday. I was in Boston, doing wicked smart things. Celebrating my anniversary with my wife out in Boston. And I was like, Pardon Will Live's not as important as my marriage. So I'm going to put that on the hierarchy scale. Anyway, did miss you guys. Hope you missed me. Got a short one for you guys tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about identity politics, everybody's favorite topic. It's something that's been going around for years now. It's not like it's anything new, but it's definitely heating up with this election season. And since Pardon Will Live is just about watching fun clips and talking about politics or whatever else, I feel like Marvel coming out, Deadpool and Wolverine, that thing looks amazing. That has nothing to do with identity politics, but I'll try to tie all that thing in, put a nice little bow on it for you guys. But anyway, before we get started, this is the last, I've been doing this for months now. This is the last time I'm promote this. Go to pardonwill.com. You can buy my book, By Every Meaningless Measure. It's a book of art and poetry smashed together. Go to pardonwill.com. You can purchase that, put it up on your shelf, look super smart, and be like, next time someone's like, hey, you into art and poetry? Be like, are you kidding me? Sure am. I got a book with it. Both those things inside of that book. It's on my bookshelf. You should go check it out. Buy yourself a copy. That's exactly what I say when people ask me about art and poetry. Go to pardonwill.com and buy you a book. It'll enrich your life. And since this is the last episode I'm going to do to promote that, I've got other projects nipping at the heels. So this will be the last time I promote that thing. I'm probably going to read a poem at the end. I know you guys love, hold on, I got to fix my seat. Super professional. You guys love poetry out in the internet spheres. So I thought maybe I'd read one. How often do you get to hear good poetry read with a majestic voice like mine? Anyway, back on to what's going on. So last week, while I was in Boston, old Joey, not Joey Scarborough, we'll get to him later. Old Joey Biden was off in Scranton, hanging out with the office, and doing a little speech. And so I thought we'd start this off with a little bit of something he said. He took some jabs at Trump. I thought it was fun. So I figured we start and take a look at that. I'm going to attempt, this isn't Twitter, so we're going to see how this works. So let's get this thing, I had it right where I wanted it. We're going to listen in for a little bit and we're going to
Vistaprint, we print your brand on everything, like t-shirts, hats, totes, hoodies, and
this is not my really fancy water bottles. By hindsight, whatever.
Look your kid in the eye and say, honey, it's going to be okay and mean it. Let's do this. You know, people like Donald Trump learn very different lessons. He learned the best way to get rich is inherited. Not a bad way.
It's not a bad way.
Not a bad way. He learned that paying taxes was something people who work for a living did, not him. He learned.
All right, so I've got to, this obviously speech is a week old. I got to translate for you guys because Biden didn't take all of his Adderall this day. He just said taxes are something that's for you, not for old Donnie, because Donnie doesn't pay taxes. That's what it was. He botched that because he's reading off a teleprompter, which we will shortly see. But that's okay. You know what? Not everybody's good with speaking sentences, me included. So let's continue.
Telling people you're fired was something to laugh about. I guess that's how you look at the world when you're in Park Avenue, Mar-a-Lago.
Okay, so I got to friggin' narrate this thing all the way down. So telling people you're fired is something to laugh at. He's referencing The Apprentice, the TV show that Trump had, where he would bring on people and if they didn't add up, he would fire them. Like if they weren't good at their job. And it was a big thing. He kept saying, you're fired. Like that was his catchphrase. And Joe's referencing that here. I just want to bring this out. The funny thing about that is because it keeps getting brought up throughout on all sides being like, you know, the one thing Trump didn't do while he was president is fire people. You should have fired way more people than you think. So that's a knock on Trump. Joey right here is right. It wasn't funny. The show was funny, but it wasn't funny until Trump got into office and was like, no, everybody's hired and they're all keeping your jobs. I thought that was interesting. So Joey's taking some pretty good slaps at Trump. and right off the bat. So I'm kind of proud of him. Let's keep going.
If you grew up in a place like Scranton, nobody handed you anything. You paid your taxes. You made sure being told you're fired wasn't entertainment. It was a nightmare people worried about. And all people knew, all I knew about the people like Trump who looked down on us were the people that haven't changed. They wouldn't welcome us in their homes and their clubs. Folks, where we come from matters. When I look at the economy, I don't see it.
Okay, hold on. Before we get to the economy, did you guys understand anything you just said? All right, so I think what his point was is he's basically, and we're going to talk a little bit about this, basically saying like he grew up in Scranton and his dad was like, you know, mailman or something, or Jimbo, his uncle's getting eaten by cannibals and Papua New Guinea, something. I don't know what he's talking about here, but he's basically trying to make a contrast that, because he's talking to people in Scranton, like, I'm like you guys. I grew up like you, and all my life it's been like you. And we'll get to that in a minute. But that's all he's doing. And he's like, it's not like Trump over here, you know, knows nothing about you guys. So that's what he's doing. I feel like I have to narrate this thing for him because he's not good at talking. And I know he's got a stutter, old stuttering Joe. But man, I felt like I got to break this down. So let's continue. I'm gonna back it up just a hair because he's gonna talk about something that. I'm just going to pause it again, so let's just keep going.
From matters. When I look at the economy, I don't see it through the eyes of Mar-a-Lago. I see it through the eyes of Scranton, and that's not hyperbole. That's
okay. I am going to stop it for a hot minute right here. So for like the past year, I don't know if you've noticed this, but every time the White House comes out and talks about the economy, the economy's booming. Economy's great. Well, look at all these jobs we got. Did you know that in 2020, a ton of people lost their job for some random reason. It's like someone just started firing people for no reason at all. People started losing their jobs left and right. And then when Biden got hired, all of a sudden people started getting their jobs back. I don't know what was going on. It's like people were being hired. But they're saying jobs increased, but no one's mentioning from the White House. But like, we know that you know why jobs increased. We know. But we're going to pretend like you're dumb and you don't understand that the world went through a pandemic and we, as the government, shut everything down, especially certain states that are gleaming or cities that are gleaming with a particular color, shut those down and a ton of people lost their jobs. I don't know if you lost your job by not releasing your medical information, but I know a ton of people who lost their jobs because they didn't, and we're going to bring this one up too, because they didn't play by the rules, we'll say, quote unquote. Play by the rules. You didn't go out and get your free burger and fries from the Shake Shack like you could have got if you would have just got a particular medicine. But I love the fact that we've been going this whole entire Biden presidency. See, I'm just like Biden. I got a stutter too. This whole time they've been like, the economy is great. We don't know what you're talking about. Look at all these rich people enjoying vacations and stuff. What are you plebs crying about with your eggs being $7 and your interest rates on homes being astronomical? You can't buy. What are you talking about? You can't buy homes. Look at all these people in Congress and all this. And we're going to talk about this. All these older folks that are selling their houses that they bought for a sack of potatoes for millions of dollars. The economy's doing great. What's America's, especially middle America, what's their problem? Don't you know the economy's doing great? And now he's off in Scranton going, I see the economy through Scranton's eyes. And that's not hyperbole. That's fact. He says that. He goes, I see the economy through yours. If he saw the economy through the eyes of Scranton, Pennsylvania, he'd be like, Jesus, I am doing an awful job. That would be what he says, but he doesn't. He reverts to Trump. He goes, you know, Trump sees the economy through the eyes of Park Ave on Mar-a-Lago. He's a billionaire. He's rich. And that's how he looks at what you're dealing with. Not like me, you know, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Joe. I see the economy the way you do. Trump's a millionaire. Trump is, you know, going to East Palestine, buying people cheeseburgers, stuff like that, hanging out with normal folks. I don't know if you've paid attention to rallies. Again, not even a Trump guy. It definitely seems like the people on the lower end of the spectrum, lower end of the scale, maybe spectrum too. That's where I belong. Seems like they're having they're struggling through this economy. And the only person that's really saying anything about the economy being hard are the people on the right. So riddle me this, Joe Joker. What's the deal? How, if you see the economy through Scranton, shouldn't you be like, man, the economy sucks. We should probably do something about that instead of being like, hey, look at all the jobs are up. No. I know they're part-time jobs. I know all of you have 2-3 jobs because you're just trying to afford eggs. But look how many jobs we got. We got a ton of them. Of course, you're only working 4 hours per each job, but it's just stats. And we had we showed a Morning Joe clip weeks ago where Morning Joe was like, I don't understand these middle Americans. Look at the Wall Street. Wall Street's booming. What does everybody complain about with these car prices being astronomical? People paying twice the amount for cars and interest. What are these plebs talking about? The more, and I'll talk about this in a minute. The more they do this, the worse it looks for them. And I don't, whoever the campaign managers are, look, here's the problem. Here's when you have people that are like high up elites and they're just doing their best to relate to most of America. They utterly fail because they don't know. They have no idea what it's like. They're so lost. So all they can do is watch TV shows, you know, like The Real Housewives and be like, so that's what poor people do. Because they don't know what poor is, because they're not poor. Joey here, Scranton Joe. He grew up in a middle-class family for sure. But the guy's been in politics for way longer than me and you combined our ages. He's been in politics longer than that, like 40-something years. The guy's not struggled whatsoever. And that's not even bringing up all the money his family's been embezzling from Ukraine, stuff like that. I don't know all the details. Something about a laptop, something about Burisma, you know, stuff like that. Let's just not even count that, or, you know, stock tradings or all the other corruption. Let's just not pretend that exists. Just him in general. I have a hard time believing somebody in the Senate's struggling to pay for their groceries too. But we don't know. I don't have to preach to the choir. You guys all know. Anyway. So that's what Joe, let's see what else he's got to say. And then we'll move on, because I got something else to say about this.
That's a fact. Where honesty and decency matter. Where faith matters, where family is everything. Where we grew up, knowing in our homes that Wall Street didn't build this country, the middle class built this country, and unions built the middle class.
All right, so quick thing. I want you to Google, middle class built this country. I want you to Google how the middle class is doing right now. Middle class is actually going on a steep decline. I don't know if you know this, but the largest transfer of wealth that's about to happen the largest transfer, meaning like a generation of wealth shifting down, will be this one that we're in right now, the throes of the boomers. So the boom, when I say the baby boomers, they own like 63% of the wealth in America or something along, or $63 trillion versus the silent generation when they pass their wealth on down to the boomers was like $15 trillion. So the boomers have all of the money and it's about to transfer down to me and my constituents, all the people like me. It's gonna be the largest transfer of wealth. So this concept, like the middle class built this country, the middle class, the one he's talking about, is no longer middle class. You are, if you are barely there, you're barely there. So I Googled the stats, middle class. I don't know what it was when you were growing up, but middle class in my head, my little junior, when I was in junior high playing basketball or soccer, if you were like, hey, little David, what's the middle class? I would have, because I'm an idiot, I'd have been like, I would have thought 30 to 50,000 a year, right? I would have thought that. Middle class, that seems about right. And the older I got, I was like, okay, no, I should have pulled the stats up. Maybe it's up to like maybe 70. I thought maybe about college age. You know, 10 years ago, middle class would have been probably about 40 to 70, because it's not lower. Lower classes, it would have been hard to struggle on that. So middle class now, it's from 55K to 155K. Bro, if you make six figures, do you remember growing up and you were like, God, I can't wait to make six figures? You were talking about 100,000 a year. Did you know that 100,000 a year, a six-figure salary, is the middle of the middle class? This is like you're back in the 60s, a postman. Like the guy's like, I just got a job hired at a mechanic shop. I change oil. That would be 100K back then. That's the middle, just your basic job, not like college PhD. That's beyond it. Those people are affording houses in the outer suburbs, poor community in California. While you're Googling, don't even look up the median income and divide up by state, see which states have the highest income, because it's all the states you think it of, especially your, where your old buddy lives now, old Joe, DC. I don't know where DC's getting all this money, but they sure got a lot of it. Anyway, so this middle class Joe's talking about that built America. Well, I don't know what they're building now because it barely exists. That whole divide, the income gap divide between the wealthy and the poor and that middle class thing is shrinking. So hopefully as it gets closer, you pop out on one of the other ends. Hopefully it's on the higher end, because I'd hate for you to be squeezed out of that whatever percentage is up at the top. Anyway, if I'm a little salty, it's because this is my president and I'm not feeling like he's relating to me at all. But the weird thing is, and I'm not even a Republican, and that Trump guy seems to relate to me a little bit more. And it's not like it was, well, it's look at all of his indictments. That's relatable, right? No, because all of these politicians have no idea what it means to be relatable. That's where we're getting back to the identity politics. So moving on, I'm going to show you something totally different. Let me get rid of this guy real quick. We're done with that Joey. Let's move to a different Joey. Actually, I don't think Joey's in this clip. You know, it's not a pardonable live unless we bring up, old Morning Joe. It's my favorite show. Here's the thing about this Morning Joe clip. We're going to go, before I get started, I'm going to switch this over here. All right, so full disclosure, this is old. This is like 2 months old. I actually played this clip back when we were talking about that white world rage that never happens and has not happened. We're seeing a lot of rage now, but it doesn't seem to be the white rural people, these crazy colleges. This clip I played before when we talked about it, but in reference to this, I only caught the last half. And they were talking about this book that's coming up, The White World Rage. And they were talking about voters voting for Biden or Trump. And they mention, towards the end, you'll see this. They mention, I remember bringing this up. They mention, looking at the backgrounds of these kids, I don't understand why these rural Americans are voting for Trump. That doesn't seem like anything they would relate to. And I was like, what are they talking about? I didn't know. I went back and found the full clip. So we're about to watch the full clip. And I'm going to explain why. This is a weird divide from right and left wing politics. And so let's watch this clip, and I want to see if you pick up on what I picked up on. So let's check this out. I don't know who this lady is. She looks super smart. She got the smart glasses. She definitely looks like a liberal, and she's about to tell me that she's offended. Let's go and see what she's got.
And as we barrel toward a likely rematch of the 2020 election, one candidate continues to have a hold over white rural voters. But it's not Joe Biden. Seen.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, there's one candidate has a hold over white rural voters, and it's not Joe Biden. So I'm going to let this thing play out, even though I want to make jokes of it, but we're just going to let it play out. And just pay attention to what they're talking about.
Here, as a boy on the right side of your screen who went to public school, is the son of a used car salesman and was born to a middle-class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Instead, it is Trump here on the left side, a private school educated son of a New York City real estate tycoon who became a millionaire at 8 years old and didn't have to serve because he claimed
broke. He became a millionaire at 8 years old. I don't think the word based belongs there, but I love how they framed it like Trump's eight and he's like, I got a popsicle stand and it's doing numbers. I'm learning my ABCs, always be closing. He's 8 years old, just making stacks. I love that. I love how they frame that. To me, I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. I like that guy. Who's the 8 year old millionaire? Because that sounds awesome. Do you guys remember that show, Richie Rich, that came out? No, it was Blank Check. There was a movie back in the 90s called Blank Check. One of my favorite movies ever. The guy gets his bicycle ran over by a bunch of gangsters and they write him a check and they leave it blank because they're in a hurry because they're running from the cops. And he just goes back into his Casio computer back in the 90s and he just types in like a million. He just types in, I don't even know if it was a million. Let's just hypothetically, it was probably like 100. It was probably six figures. He was like, six figures. He types in 100K and he goes and he buys like a mansion that has its own slide in it. Great movie. Go check it out. I think it was called Blank Check. Almost positive. Phenomenally. Anyway, the gangsters try to come back for that money that he stole. But there's a lesson in there somewhere. And I think Sinbad's a genie. I don't know. Somewhere in that movie. great movie, though. Anyway, let's continue. Sorry, weird rant. But yeah, that 8-year-old millionaire sounds baller. Like, that would be a friend. I would like to be friends with that one. Anyway, let's continue. Let's see what's going on here.
He had bone spurs in his little feet. So why is it that Trump appeals so much to a group he couldn't be more different from? Joining us now, professor of political science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, Tom Schaller, and journalist and opinion writer Paul Waldman. Their new book, out tomorrow, is entitled White Rural Rage,
so this is the clip I showed.
Threat to American Democracy. And Tom, we'll start with you. Why are white rural voters a threat to democracy at this point? You would think, as we pointed out, looking at Joe Biden's background and Donald Trump's, that the opposite would be true.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to show you. That little clip. So the whole thing is like, why? You think the opposite would be true? Because all of this whole thing, I don't know if you picked up on it, that's all identity politics. The only thing they think you as an American, American, if you're not in America and you're watching this, they're not talking to you, so you don't have to pay attention. You can just listen to me. I'll tell you what's going on over here in the States. The only reason they do is because they think you vote through your identity, who you think you can relate to. That's why they're confused. That's why they have no idea why all of these people are for Trump. All these middle class Americans, these rural, they just think you're racist. They're like, oh, of course, they're just voting because Trump's a racist and these people are racist. That's why they're voting for him. But other than that, look, he's a millionaire. And hey, why would they want to vote for somebody they don't relate to at all? Do you think when you go to the voting poll and you're like, I'm gonna vote for the candidate that went to my high school that had the similar parents to mine, that check, check, check. And I don't think this is completely all on the left, but it sure does seem like the left is only thinks of identity politics. And you can see that with every news article, everything that's been like, well, you know, how's your experience as a so-and-so with your particular color? It's got to be relatable to everybody. You can see it with Disney. We had this conversation before about, what was I talking about? I think it was Echo or something like that. No, and I think it was Loki. And I was like, what? How come Loki did so good and then all the other, Miss Marvels, failed? And I think it's because we're like, well, look, we put a little Pakistani girl and that'll relate to a ton of people in New Jersey and that'll bring up ratings. Because they think that we need superheroes to look like us, to be from where we're from, to relate. And then I was like, well, then what about Loki? How many Asgardian gods do you know that have fallen on hard times and can't get a good rap? You think that's important? Or what if it's like overarching principles? What about values? Like, what if it's, here's a weird one. What if it's a character that doesn't look like me, but has the same particular, hierarchy of values as I have? What if they care about their family? Am I not allowed to relate to that because my skin color is different or my background's different? What if, hear me out, what if I relate to Tony Stark, who is a billionaire, tech philanthropist, playboy, you saw that clip. How am I supposed to, because I see the humanity in him, because I relate to certain things, aspects of the character that they are. See, that's what the left does not understand. They think it's all surface level. Well, Joe grew up in Scranton, just like you working class people. Well, you should vote for him. He knows where you're coming from. Does he? He's been in office for 47,000 years. He's worth more money than God knows what. And when I hear him, it sounds like pandering. Trump panders for sure. But it's not like he's hiding the fact that he's a millionaire. It's not like he goes around and be like, I'm Trump from, rural Trump. No, he's like, hey, I'm a millionaire. I get it. Like, I have a lot of money and I want that opportunity for you. I'm for the American. I want them to actually be able to buy eggs at a reasonable price. I want you to be like me. I don't want me to have to be like you for you to vote for. I want you to have an opportunity that I had. Or obviously not everyone's going to inherit money. But he doesn't walk around pretending that he's something that he's not. Although he is kind of middle class. He eats a steak well done. He's constantly doing stuff that middle class people would do if you dropped a golden. I don't even know if he has a golden toilet. But I guarantee if you went to a NASCAR rally right now and you dropped $1 million in everyone's pocket going through there with their Dale Earnhardt Jr. t-shirts on. You go, hey, buddy, here's $1 million. I guarantee you 60% of that audience would leave and go buy a golden toilet. You want to know why? Because it's a normal thing for people to do. Well, no, it's not normal. That's not normal at all. But who knows? If you had $1 million, it's a golden toilet. I mean, I might buy a gold. No, I'm not going to buy a golden toilet. But I understand. So he doesn't go around Trump doesn't walk around being like, I'm from so-and-so, even though I've been in office. And you know Joe's not poor. He doesn't know what it's like to be poor. As many stories as he tells about hanging around the pool with Corn Pop and kids touching his hairy legs, that's normal. Don't you relate to that, Democrat voter? Don't you relate to, swishing around a switchblade and a rusty chain, talking to Corn Pop while kids touch your hairy legs? You don't relate to that? Why not? Because Joe grew up in Scranton. You don't relate to that? I mean, you relate to this other guy, Trump, who just says whatever he thinks all the time. I don't even know if the guy reads a teleprompter. Bro, I don't know if he can read. I don't even know if he has to. Does the guy even have to read? Does it matter? And that's my point. This identity politic thing, sure, it shows up on the right and the left. For sure. But what I'm pretty sure, it's not as predominant on the right as it is on the left. And I say that because of this Morning Joe clip. I genuinely think, I don't think they're lying to you. I genuinely think a lot of left-wing people can't figure out why people want to vote for a guy that didn't grow up like them or didn't look like them. This came up with the Vivek Ramaswamy thing when he was running in the primaries. And I saw a lot of people being like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. He's Indian, and Republicans will not vote for a brown person. Oh, then Nikki Haley shows up, and we're like, look at this white chick. She's like, no, 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 I am brown. She got some votes too. But then Vivek started opening his mouth, and a lot of people gravitate to him, like me. And we're all like, dude, is this kind of an op? Like, is he saying all the right things? And you know what no one cared about? What he looked like. The only person who did care about what he looked like when he was talking was Don Lemon. And he lost his job because he tried to out-brown Vivek. He's like, but you can't talk about brown people. He's like, bro, I am brown. He's like, well, what kind of brown are you? And that's my point. Leftists always look at identity before any context of character or anything that comes out of their mouth. Vivek's got a great platform, did a great job. Yeah, did he change on his politics? Yeah, but the guy talked for like 6 hours on every podcast for a year. And so I'm sure he got around. I was like, this one take I had a few months ago probably wasn't very good. I should probably change it. But a lot of people on the right like Vivek. They still like Vivek because the things he says, not because they're like, well, this guy's, he's a tech guy and he was in pharmaceuticals. You know, the other thing that Trump people don't like, they don't like when you have to pretend that you have to be for everything that other person is. I like Vivek. Do I know all about his pharmaceutical business stuff? No. His identity as a pharma bro, does that bother me? No, it doesn't bother me. So here's my next thing. Let's bring this up. I'm going to bring this up because Aaron Day, a guy I follow on the old Twitters. Actually, hold on. We're gonna do another because I said I was going to play clips. I'm going to try. So here's a little. So here's the thing, guys. I don't know if you know this. Bit of a Luddite. I don't know tech. I'm not good at this live stream thing. I've been doing it for months now. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm not good at it. Not at all. I'm getting better. Well, no, I don't know if I'm getting. I'm just picking up on when things are a problem. So when I go to Twitter to try to play a video, it never seems to want to play. I'm going to do it because this was too funny. Because this is how relate. This is how you know somebody's real. So if it plays, it plays. If it doesn't, I'm so deeply sorry. I'm not even going to change it. This is just fun. So speaking of white rural voters, let me see if you can see this. Yeah, we're just going to leave it this way and put me small in the corner. Got to hope this plays because it's so funny. I don't know why America doesn't relate to Biden. And this stuff outrages me. White rural America and your rage. Will you guys knock it off? And this is your president. He's in Scranton. It's your president. You should love him.
I've never thought I'd see a time when I'm going through a neighborhood or a rural town in the West to see big signs that have a Trump sign in the middle that says F Biden. and having a little kid standing with his middle finger, 7 years old, 8 years old. Well, I promise it happens all the time.
Does it, Joe? Does it happen all the time? I don't know if the audio quality is rough for y'all. Let me try to bring that down. My God. See, these are the pardonable lives that I love. Just having a good old time. You remember? He was just talking about Trump being an... they were talking about Trump being an 8-year-old millionaire. This is what... If Trump... There's a conspiracy theory that Trump is a time traveler. There is nothing more in my heart of hearts that I would want than Trump as an 8-year-old millionaire to time travel to Scranton, PA in 2024 and flip off Joe Biden.
Rural town is in the West, are sending to see big signs that have a Trump sign in the middle that says F Biden, and having a little kid standing with his middle finger, 7 years old, 8 years old.
Based.
Well, I promise it happens all the time. I've never.
Oh, I promise it happens all the time. Look, it's not funny. Quit laughing. The guy's got a stutter. He's 80 years old. Stop laughing. It's your present. Show some respect as he stumbles through 4 more years. Pause. Did you guys see that clip? Oh, I almost pulled that up, but I get nervous with Twitter. That one played, but they don't always play. Find another speech. Flub the teleprompter. Said the words that you're not supposed to say. You're just the action you're supposed to do. Don't you want 4 more years of this guy? Pause. He said pause. Anyway, I rubbed my eye and ate spicy food earlier. Now my eye's on fire. Professionalism. That's what you get at the Pardonable Podcast. Pardonable Live. Professionalism. Anyway, that's a funny clip. That's not what I was going to show you. Back to identity politics. Hold on, let me get out of this, see if I can pull this up. So there's this tweet going around on Twitter recently, and I couldn't find it. Let's go here first. Oh. All right, I'm going to share this with you guys. I'm going to leave this up. So an acquaintance, just a guy I follow on Twitter. I don't even know if Aaron follows me back. Anyway, he's a libertarian guy, I think, or I don't know. And he posted this, and I thought this. So Trump posted this Truth Social and shared on Twitter. And my boy Aaron Day tweets out this particular screenshot. It says, MAGA, please suspend this. I'll wait. So it's Trump talking about RFK and how he thinks actually RFK is worse than Biden. Because he grew up with him and he's super, you know, conspiracy, and he's all about energy costs and ruined upstate where I live in New England by not letting him frack, blah, blah. And then at the bottom, he said, I'd even take Joe Biden over Junior, RFK, because our country wouldn't last a year or two longer prior to collapse, but it would be dead either way, which I thought that was terribly optimistic. His views on vaccines are fake, as everything else about his candidacy. So Aaron's asking for MAGA people to respond to this, to defend it. I'm not quote unquote MAGA, but I think if I was gonna be responding to it, I think I would be like all the other MAGA people at Trump's rallies that show up, that pack the house. And every time he brings up those dumb vaccines, hopefully I can say this on YouTube without getting kicked, but they haven't kicked me yet because I think I'm super small. I'm under the radar, or I don't know what the rules are anymore. But anyway, every time he brings up the greatest vaccines, that whole thing he does, the entire MAGA crowd boos because they don't have to defend the guy. Because apparently to them, Trump's not Jesus. We went over this multiple times, guys. People on the right, MAGA, these white evangelicals, these Christians, they already have their Messiah. Trump is just the middle finger. Trump is just the 8-year-old middle finger. Trump is a symptom to what the country, the Uniparty, the neocons, all that stuff, what they've done over the past few decades. Trump is just the response to that. And so, yeah, I don't think MAGA people have to defend Trump on everything. Some of them do. Some of them are a little cultish. Let's give it up. Everyone's got their cults. Joe Scarborough's in a cult. He loves Biden. He thinks Biden's cogent. Cogent. I would play that clip. I need to have that on hand so I can just hit it all the time. We watch a Biden clip where he friggin' stumbles, and I have to narrate for him to make it sound like he's a normal person. yeah, everybody's got the Colts, but most MAGA people are like, yeah, that vaccine thing was dumb, and Trump's dumb for bringing it up. But I don't know if he's just trying to play to the independents, which is where I land. I'm an independent. And he's like, most of these independents are probably all for this big pharma Pfizer stuff because they're, you know, NPCs, they're newbies. They don't pay attention. They don't think. They're just like, well, whatever the government says should be somewhat normal. These people are still stuck in a normalcy bias. I think that's who he's playing to. But the idea that Trump was like, Biden's better than RFK, makes me a little suspicious of RFK, but not as suspicious of Joe Biden. When I don't know if you saw this last week while I was in Boston, but his entire family, RFK's, I'm not even going to play that clip because you can Google it too. His entire family came out and endorsed Joe Biden. Bro, your brother, your cousin's running for president. You can back him. What's going on there? And my thing is, every time I've listened to RFK stumble through his own podcast, and it's not because he doesn't know how to speak, because he has a hard time doing it. The dude does it anyway. I've got other critiques than that. I don't have the same one old Donnie here has, but I've got other critiques. I'm not going to vote for RFK. But I just don't think it's that he's that bad off than Biden. Anyway, I don't have to defend Trump when he brings up vaccines. Neither does MAGA people. I'm giving all you MAGA people, I'm giving you the vaccine pass. That worked out great. You don't have to defend Trump every time he says something dumb about vaccines. You just let it ride. Again, he's still the symptom. He's not the Messiah. He's just a middle finger. Here's another thing that got brought up on Twitter. This is going back to the identity. This is another thing, identity. People don't have to be all Trump in to be on the right side and be voting for him. There's a ton of DeSantis people who, like, still think DeSantis is a better presidential candidate. But they're going to vote for old Trumpy boy because he took away with the whole primary thing. The only person in the Republic that I heard like I would have thought too, if DeSantis pulled the primaries in and Trump got kicked, all the Trump people would have voted for DeSantis because everyone hates Joe Biden. The only person that seems to be maybe slightly worse is Nikki Haley. That's on the right side. And Kamala is the other side. So half of the Trump people are like, this Biden guy's awful, but sure hope he lasts, because last thing we want is Kamala. And then the really last thing we want is a Kamala and Haley, like them going at it, because I don't, it's cats fighting. I don't even want to deal with that. We're already in clown world. Let's not go any further. Anyway, identity politics, guys, I don't know if you figured this out yet. Super dumb. You don't have to vote for people that look like you or have your exact experiences. What you're going to try to look for is character and values that you align with yours. I want to vote for somebody who has my values. Does Trump have my values? No. But he has the ones closest to it so far. The libertarians have a few more of my values, but I got to see if they're being serious on that one. And I know a lot of them are. There's a few libertarian candidates that if they make it to the primary, I probably will cast my vote for them. But right now, I'm enjoying the heck out of the symptom. I'm feeling a lot like that 7-year-old in that clip flipping Joe Biden off. And I don't know if a libertarian candidate is a big enough middle finger. I think it would be. But the fact that I wouldn't get to show it because there's no way that libertarian candidate's going to win makes me mad. Like, it's a bigger middle finger, especially to like the whole Uniparty thing. It's the biggest middle finger that you can come up with. A good like ANCAP libertarian candidate would be the biggest middle finger. The problem is you'll never get to flash it. It'll just be in your pocket the whole time because they're not going to make it. Trump, smaller little finger, remember, tiny hands jokes. It's a tiny middle finger, but at least people can somewhat see it. And so I'm probably leaning towards the Trump side because a little middle finger is better than no middle finger. Anyway, that's a weird analogy. Sunday night, guys, we're just having fun. Back into the identity politics, I want to bring up one more thing. So there's this tweet, and it was going around, and I thought it interesting, and I couldn't find it, so I had to search it, and now my Twitter searches look super weird. Hold on, let me get to this thing real quick. Oh, no, I don't even know where I'm at. How do I get out of this? You can't see what I'm doing, but I'm trying to figure out my computer because I'm super bad at this. I don't know if you guys know. All right. So there's this tweet that went out and said, white evangelical Americans, I'm paraphrasing, how do you feel about this picture? And I thought this was a very interesting experiment because we've seen this a lot. We're going to drop into the racial stuff real quick. I'm going to go full on in the paint. It's posted about this. This is a different tweet, but it was similar picture, not the full picture, but a similar picture. Check this out. It's basically like, all you Christians out there, how do you feel about this picture? Does this offend you? As a, if you're a white evangelical, white Orthodox, white Christian, white Catholic, whatever, does this picture offend you? Let me see if I do it this way. And I thought it was interesting because the majority of the responses were like, no. And I think what people, and I think the person who posted this was on the left. Again, they're obsessed with the identity thing. If you don't, it's shared experience. It's collectivism. And they don't understand because everyone on the left looks at everything in tribes. I don't know if that's true. I would say it's true for all. Most people look at everything in tribes. But there's this weird characteristic thing with this individualism that America was founded on. That thing seems to creep in and destroy that tribalism concept. And I think that was birthed out of Christianity. And let me explain to you. This is why I brought this picture up. So this picture doesn't offend me. You want to know why? I'm not really sure if I even cared what Jesus looked like. He could have been black. He could have been Asian. He could have been Alaskan. It could have been Samoan. Not even a concern of mine. Doesn't make his words any less valuable. Doesn't even make the New Testament less relatable. It doesn't make it more relatable. It doesn't change a thing. It doesn't change anything. I think people are still caught up in this. If it doesn't seem to share a shared reality of mine, I can't be a part of it. This is why I love Marvel movies. I can tie myself into any character. They can be whatever they are and still feel a connection because the human experience is in the hierarchy. The human experience is something we all share. And I know your cultural experience, where you grew up, having money, socially economic, having money, not having money, in the South, in the North, in a different country, in America, you know, by the coast, middle America, all this stuff plays a part in who you relate to, that homogeny, who you feel comfortable around. But if you continue to view a 30,000 foot view, the human experience, the archetypes, the things that we all go through, that's something we all share. And I think the more individualist, which sounds completely weird, people think when you're an individualist and you only look at, you know, content of character, that's how you judge people, is how they, their content, the character, and not what they look like, or not where they're from, or not what they talk like, or what their accent. If you just judge people by who they are, that seems like a very insulated, like, no one does that. It seems like you're very shut off. You're very isolated because you're an individualist. What it really means is that you start to look at the world at a 30,000 foot view, which means you start to look at people as their shared characteristics, not on a surface level. Does that make sense? When I meet someone, do I judge them on the surface? Absolutely. Everyone does. That's fine. That's a good, quick mechanism. Is that how I think people are in general? No, that's just surface level. When I go for a candidate, do I vote for a candidate because of what they look like? No. Why? Because they're trying to run the country. Do I think what you look like matters? No, I don't. Same as I don't think if Jesus was black, that would change my opinion at all, because it doesn't. Because there are people out there, and you're probably one of them. So I'm just saying this so you don't feel crazy. Not everybody has to look, feel, sound, and come from where you come from for you to relate to them. People are people. We all love. We all hate. We all have hard days. We all have good days. We all have dreams, and we all have relationships, and we all have things that fail, and we have things that succeed. We all have these experiences because we're all human. And I hate to tell you, there's no culture that's going to take away your human experience. And you can take the cannibals that ate Joe Biden's uncle in Papua New Guinea. You can take them, and I guarantee you have some things that you relate to them. I'm sure there's some bad apples in that cannibal. This is a weird pun, layers of jokes on top of each other, but there's probably very fine people on both sides of the cannibal spectrum. Wow, I'm just really laying out the jokes today. Anyway, my point is this. Identity politics, I'm afraid, might only get worse. People start might to tribal off. Like we saw, the world, the whole political spectrum is tribal enough. And now we have divisions, especially with what's going on in college campuses. Are you for Israel? Are you for Palestine? What if you're not for either? What if you're for both? That's not an option anymore. You have to pick a side. Because why? Because you can't think outside of this particular binary. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of people that do, that genuinely do, that genuinely look at people's content and character. They genuinely look at certain situations and look deeply into them. This is important. And this is something that you need to know. This is why I do this stupid live, this pardonable live, is so you don't feel crazy. And so, you know, there's normal people out there like, yeah, this stuff doesn't bother me. And if it does, but like, no, that's not the Jesus I grew up with. That's fine. I'm just telling you, this shouldn't bother you. There's a whole scripture in there that there's no Jew, no Gentile, no man, no woman, no master, no slave, because it's unified under the gospel, Christ, the person of Christ, not whatever character you have in your head. The person of Christ is the unifying thing. And that's important. And so the Christian ethos is anti-identity politics. Just wanted to tell you that. The Christian ethos has nothing to do with the culture you're coming. I almost did a whole podcast and I might, because I've been thinking about this a lot and been getting in arguments online. Let's see what we got here. Trump, we need so bad 2024. I agree, dude. Hi. He says hi. Like that, that handle coming in hot from Twitch. If you're watching this on Twitch, like and subscribe. I think I got one follower over there. Question. Let's keep going with this. We'll get back to it. Question for you. Have you ever watched Salty Cracker? I have. Love Salty Cracker. He's funnier than I am. I'll give it to him. He's a funny guy. I like Salty Cracker. Smarter than I am, too. Almost as cool of a background. I think I might have him on the background, but we'll get him there. He's got a pretty good background. That's how I judge people. Not on their content, not on the character, not on the skin color or how much money they make. How's their podcast background? Those are the real questions we need to talk about. Anyway, so this identity politics thing is only going to get worse. And what I love about the Christian ethic is it goes heartily. Oh, this is what I was going to say. I thought about doing a whole podcast on everyone seems to hate denominations. One of the big arguments, this is a weird side rant, but I want to bring this up real quick. I want you to think about this because I might do a whole episode on it. Everyone hates this, you know, like Orthodox, they don't have any bunch of denominations. And the Catholics, they're all unified because they have a hierarchy and a pope and bishops and everything has to run through this particular hierarchy. So they're extremely unified. The Protestants over there, they're a bunch of wacky bunch. Why? Because they got denominations all over. This one wrestles with snakes and this one speaks in tongues and this one's got rainbow flags up outside. And this, they're all over the place. None of them are unified. And everyone's like, well, the one problem with Protestants is there's no unity. Wrong. Actually, is some pretty starch unity, and you could divide certain Protestants up very big on where they center the gospel, where the gospel is placed in their whole entire church community ethos. So there is some starch unity. What my thing is I know everyone looks at denominations, there being so many, as a bad thing. I don't think so. I think it's an actual feature. I don't think it's a bug. I don't think it's a problem with Protestantism. I think it's actually a beautiful thing about being Christian and a Protestant, because Protestants look at Catholics like, you know, that Mary thing's a little weird, but I'm pretty sure I'll see all these Catholics in heaven. Same with the Orthodox. The Protestants don't have any qualms with that, because the thing that unites the Protestants is their outlook on the core essential concept, which is the gospel message of Christ. That's the thing that unifies them. Now, does one church speak in tongues and, you know, dance with flags, and the other church, you know, reads from hymnals and only allows an organ on stage? For sure. You know who they believe in? The same Jesus. You know what they do different? They worship differently. Now, I don't know if you know this, but there's a scripture in the Bible where Jesus is walking and he meets a woman at the well. And this is, you can preach on this for days. I'm not going to. But the one thing that did point out, and I want to point this out, I should have done a whole friggin' episode over. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll bring this back up. But just for you, she talks about the difference between Hebrews and Samaritans. And she's like, you're not supposed to be talking to me. She's talking to Jesus, by the way. I don't know if you've read this story. I think it's in Matthew, the woman at the well. She's like, hey, you're not supposed to, you know, be talking to me. I'm not even supposed to serve you water because you're Hebrew. You guys worship on that mountain. We, you know, this is the well. This is what we do. We're not allowed to. And Jesus says to her, there comes a day where you will neither worship on this well, but you will worship in spirit and truth. That is the key essential concept, the Protestant gospel, what unifies Protestants. So can you have different denominations? For sure. Is it a bit like different strokes for different folks? For sure. There's nothing wrong with culture, and there's nothing wrong with identity. If you go to a church and all your pictures of Jesus look like this, that's fine. That's totally fine. If you go to church and all your pictures of Jesus are white, that's fine too. You know what doesn't matter? What he looks like. Because you know what unifies both those churches? The same Jesus. Mind blown, right? That's the point. That's the point of the Christian ethos. That's the point of what a real politic should look like. When you go to vote, you vote for the thing that's the most important, not the surface level. Is this person have the same values as I? Are they after the same things? Do they have the same particular agenda? Are they going to highlight the things that I find important? Like economy, when you're trying to buy eggs for $7. Like gasoline, when you barely can make it to work. Like your interest rates, where you're paying more in interest than you are for your actual car. These are all economic stuff. Let's go, you can take anything. If abortion is your thing and you're super pro-life, why don't you pick the best candidate that deals with abortion? Spoiler alert, it's not right or left in this aspect. If you really want to look into the abortion thing in a candidate that's extra pro-life, look at Josh Smith. He's a libertarian candidate running, if you're in the Libertarian Party. Go look his platform up. Might be the most Christian platform I've seen, and he's coming out of the Libertarian Party. Anyway, there's a little shout-out to Josh. The Christian ethos unifies under the gospel, the message of the gospel, the good news. Christ died, rose again for your sins. That whole thing, that's what unifies Protestants. Not whether or not you have a tambourine, not the color of your carpet. If your building's in a cathedral or a shopping store plaza, none of that stuff matters. What matters is the message. And that's my point when it comes to politics. Identity politics is dumb and should be treated as dumb. And hopefully we don't get wrapped up into it. Whoever I vote for, it will have nothing to do with what they look like, where they're from. If they were a millionaire at 8 years old, don't care. Because the guy I worship came out of Bethlehem. It probably doesn't look anything. I can guarantee he might not be black. He might not be super tan. But I guarantee you Jesus looked nothing like me. That one's probably spot. I'm probably more correct about that than anything I've been correct on in my podcast live ever. That might be the most correct statement I've ever said. Jesus definitely didn't look like me. Beard, maybe. Everything else, totally not. But that's my point. I worship a guy that doesn't look anything like me. Also, you know, if that's the core of my, like, I don't understand why I have a problem voting for a guy like Vivek. Or Obama. I mean, Obama, me and him, we don't line up on anything. Vivek, he seems to line up on everything I want to line up with. So I don't even know if he's a real person. I think he might be AI generated. Someone sneaked into my computer like, who would this guy vote for? And out came Vivek. Vivek might look like what Jesus might have looked like. I'll add that one to the end. Maybe Jesus looked like Vivek Ramaswamy. Anyway, this thing's getting wild. I promised you guys a not short podcast and we're going on an hour. I'm going to read you a poem. So if you want support this podcast, oh, we got one more comment. Let me read this comment. Oh, we're back with Trump We Need So Bad. So I'm glad I found this channel. Thank you. I'm glad you found this channel as well. Thanks for hopping in and listening to me rant. Again, not as fiery rants as Salty Cracker. I'm a little bit more nuanced, I guess, or I'm just a little bit more slow. Probably both. Definitely that. If you want to support this podcast, go to pardonwill.com. And buy my book. Let me change. I think I got something here. Here you go. This will work. Let's get rid of this. Go to pardonwill.com. You can buy my book. I'm going to read a poem from. This is the last time I'm promoting the book. If you're like, I hate poetry, you can just hop on out real quick. This one's a bit of a long one. I'm going to read it quickly. But it has a little bit to do with identity and what I just talked about the Jesus thing. And so before I go into this poem, you guys know it's going to be about Jesus, because for some reason I can't stop talking about him. Love Jesus. It's just a big thing of mine. So I wrote a bunch of poetry has to do with theology. I'm going to read this poem. My screen looks blurry to me all of a sudden. I think it's because the hot sauce I rubbed in my eyes earlier. I might be going blind. You guys are watching it in real time. God, I hope I can read this poetry. This poem is written. It's a lot of excerpts. It's written from a first personal story, like reading out the Old Testament, all Exodus, Numbers, all the way through. In a relational way of the way I wrote it, the way I looked at putting myself in the position of all these people in the Bible. So it's like a first person account of all the stories that I read in the Old Testament, all the way up to the crucifixion. And I wrote it specifically because, I mean, I wrote it long before this Israel-Palestine thing coming out. But a lot of people are wrapped up in where people came from, who they are, how much of what they are is important. And I think a lot of people get confused when it comes to Christians, because what's the Christian side of this one? I can tell you the Christian side of this one's on the Christ side. I don't know about politics and foreign, domestic, all that stuff. But I can tell you the Christian perspective is the one where if whoever's the worst in this confrontation, the Christian should put themselves in that spot, because I don't know if a Christian looks at them highly as, you know, the winners of everything. I think the Christian has a tendency to stand in the back of the church and pound their chest and say, Father, have mercy on me. And so this poem was, I wrote this poem in a way of growing up and just struggling to come to Christianity because I was struggling with who Jesus was. And then towards the end, I realized. So I wrote it from a first person. Anyway, I keep trying to explain it. You're just going to have to listen. Hopefully you enjoy it. It's called Scatter Our Bones. This weary exodus lacks power and progression. I've seen a stone split like the sea when struck. What good are miracles if paired with hard lessons? What good is heaven's bread if you can't store it up? We're circling back at the same the scenery cascades. Walking this dried bed, we can't see our reflection. These large walls of water display our own mundane. And fire and clouds can never solve that dereliction. Why lead us to where we have to scatter our bones if the earth doesn't decide to swallow our brothers up? There were perfectly good graves back home. Strawless bricks were a burden, but this is too much. Courage is nice, but who longs to face the fear? Send Moses up the mountain to keep God from coming down. And golden calf forbid we walk another 40 years, still better than letting giants put us in the ground. You promised us a land flowing with milk and honey, and you said nothing about the risk of losing a winning fight. And disregard my brother's many falsifiable testimonies. I'd trade this land for a meal like it was my birthright. 10 laws or 10 plagues, either way, we're slaves. Either blood on our doors or there's blood on our hands. And thou shalt live by his words or live with our shame. For a treasure was found buried after we sold off the land. Send us a real hero, one who will conquer the nations, like all of our enemies who rise up and fall apart. God is our king. Please don't be so audacious. Real kings ride horses. They don't dwell in an ark. What prophet dines with thieves and crooks? What prophets had words burned in my chest? I've memorized all of the first 5 books, and I've murdered those who have titled the rest. Don't look now, but I think we've tricked this Nazarene. Do we honor God or Caesar with the money in our hands? Did we turn over tables in the temple to cause a scene? How dare you write our names in these adulterous sands? What author can pen such irony as this? We ate fruit of the tree while you wept for your friends. What garden variety is this that is sealed with a kiss? Is 30 silver enough to bring this to an end? 3 crows and a little child's blunt accusation was enough to bring your beloved over to our side. Carrying your cross was your very own exclamation while we spit on your blindfold and told you to prophesy. No thief in Jerusalem could save his own skin. What makes the blasphemer think he could do the same? We'll shout free Barabbas from all of his sins while you bear all of our grief, strife, and shame. What manner of man could do such a thing? Guess you healed the sick and gave the lame to stance. But we require more than a dirge for us to sing and more than a flute for us to dance. The Messiah is meant to free us from all of our enemies. You offer to free us from ourselves and our guilty chains. What kind of savior rules with mercy established in his creed? What kind of king rules on the favor of his grace? I gave this Jesus 3 chances to denounce his old beliefs. Before I gave him spoiled wine, a spear, and my own profanes. Now it is finished, and for a moment of feigning relief, for now I do see the blood and water run down from his veins. Oh God, what tragedy is this? Did we slay the wrong man? For the sky is darkened and the weight of grief is profound. The veil is ripped from the peak down to the sand. What glittered adored the thorns that we made into a crown. Have mercy on me, for I had not known what manner of a king who served beneath his throne. What God would have taken his own unto death. What manner of God has mercy on my very breath? There you go. That's the last poem I'm going to read on Parliament Live. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Everyone seems to stuck around. You can go buy that book. Anyway, so that whole thing was written from a first-person perspective throughout all the ages of the Bible. I put myself in the worst possible scenarios, always complaining, always doing the worst thing, because that's how I feel when I look at Christ. I'm always doing the wrong thing. He's always doing the right thing. And at the very end, of course, his salvation and grace comes through, even when I'm the one putting him up on the cross. That's how a Christian should look at things. That's how you should always go about your life. That's the Christian ethos. So when it comes to politics, don't get so caught up in identity, because your identity should be caught up in Christ. There you go. There's a good tie on the bow. Anyway, go to partnerworld.com, buy the book. You can read that poet for yourself. You can read it on your own YouTube channel, on your own podcast, and all that good stuff. Anyway, I'm back. No more vacations, I promise. I'm lying. Hopefully there's plenty more. I'll be back here next Sunday, 8-ish, 8:30-ish. Anyway, I hope all of you have a wonderful week. God bless, and I love you. I hope it's great. Bye, guys.